This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt here for one day, back from my vacation. Thank you very much to Todd Mickelson and Brett Johnson for filling in for me on those days. Thank you. That's always nice because I like taking time off, but I don't like just doing best of shows. Nothing against some of the shows that do that. It's nice to have new content. You guys stepped up. Thank you very much. Brand new shows all this last week, and you can hear them all on SoundCloud. I encourage you to go iTunes, SoundCloud, the radio station webpage. Go listen to the shows. They're just fantastic. Thank you, Brett.
Absolutely.
I was up north for some time. You can probably smell that. My bad. Should have factored in some time for a shower. I lose some things. House cleaning really quick here. We are back today, and then our show is off tomorrow. We've got that great show we did with Bakken, Greg Bakken, when we were talking about UFOs.
Oh, yes.
We got that one tomorrow. And then, of course, a best of show on the 5th. We are back with regular shows running through what is supposed to be a god-awful hot July. We're looking forward to it. We'll be here all that month, so we're looking forward to that. But, Brett, I got to tell you a few things, and I'm going to talk to Sven. Sven Sundgaard's going to join us a little later to talk weather. Robert Burrill, his run over at Acme Comedy Show, is doing that all this week. We're going to talk to him, see how that's going. And Stein, a rare Stein appearance on a Thursday. He's going to join us here in just about a little less than a half hour. So some things. First of all, the fishing up north, people are apocalyptic because you can't find panfish, crappie, you know, perch, bluegill, stuff like that. Anything that's catchable, anything that's legal size, is like it's gone. I saw a lot of small ones like this. I caught some bass and some northern, some game fish. No walleye, no panfish, nothing. And the locals up there they've never seen this before. I don't know if they're dead. God forbid. I mean, if these lakes are, holy God, I can't even think of the environmental catastrophe, something like that. Or if they've just buried themselves in the deepest parts of these lakes and just hoping for this heat to go by. But you talk to locals up north, there is no fishing. It has been the worst fishing year they've ever seen. Unbelievable.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
There's
to start off the show on a positive light.
No more fishing in northern Minnesota.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I mean, you know, it is remarkable how everywhere you went up there, no, there's no fish biting anywhere. Lake Superior, no fishing biting there. Any of the lakes up in the range, nothing up there. Vermilion, nothing. And any of the chain of lakes on the north on the border, nothing. I've never seen anything like it. I generally do catch and release. And so, you know, we caught some bass, put them northern back in. But that was weird. Remember we talked about 2 years ago about animals that are migrating north that you generally don't see in northern Minnesota? I saw turkeys. Now, when I go north, I always see a bunch of loons. Always see the loons. But I don't see too many turkeys. That's usually kind of more southern Minnesota. The turkeys are in the southern part. The loons are in the north. Well, now we got loons and turkeys in the north, and so chaos is happening. I saw turkeys. Turkeys. In northern Minnesota, that's weird. I've never seen a turkey in northern Minnesota. I'm not saying they don't exist up there. I'm not saying, I know there's some, where you sit a person. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you come mess with our city turkeys. Good luck with that. You can have a gun. It's not going to go well for you. They're organized in the city.
Especially those northeast Minneapolis turkeys. Man, those are brutal.
Watch out on Hayes. They run a mean street over there. But, no, I saw turkeys in northern Minnesota. But by far, the story that kind of stuck with me and I had to keep revisiting the entire week I was up there. So I went on Saturday. I was in Duluth. Beautiful Duluth. And a shout-out to the entire Duluth DFL contingent. Liz Olson and crew giving me a shout-out because I was up there. Beautiful. And I talked to them. I unfortunately had a pretty bad experience with food in Duluth. And nothing against it. And I like Duluth. Duluth has got that character and charm of an old-school Soviet work farm. You know, you can't find buildings like that are built just for, you know, we build with concrete. It survives the winter. It's good enough. And it is, you know, a coat of paint, you're fine. I mean, Shag and Scoob should be investigating a lot of those buildings, but okay, fine. But I like Duluth. Duluth has got it's got some character, it's got some culture, and I like it. And I love the Leif Erikson Flower Gardens and the what they've done on the riverfront, Fitgers, and of course down by the lift bridge is always nice. But I had three bad meals. And first one, I went and got a donut. Nice chocolate glazed donut, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you don't do with a glazed donut? Wrap it tightly. I had a mess. And now I didn't complain about that because I got some high school kid who's working in a coffee shop. Like, okay, here. I'm like, all right. Second place I went for food later that day. Thank God I was with teenagers. Subway. Eat fresh. Anywho, so we had three components to our meal: drinks, sandwiches, and chips. They somehow missed all the chips. And when we knocked on the door, when we said chips, they looked at us like, chips? And I'm like, okay, just we had chips here, and they gave us. So two for two. But here is the problem. There was a problem. I went to – you ever been to Blackwoods up there?
That's no, not up there.
Nice little restaurant. It's a lovely place. They have a few different places. I think Twin Ports, they got one in as well. I will say this. I had a wild rice patty melt up there. Unbelievably delicious. I will go back just for that because that was amazing. It was so tasty. But that being said, we ordered some family food. They had curbside pickup. Not my standards, theirs. We had to run through a 50-point questionnaire to make this order about, you know, what our car looks like, what's our cell phone, we need a credit card, we need to do this. You know, I'm fine. And they said, before we even picked up the food, do you want to add a tip? And I said, sure. And we added, I figured out, 17-18%, added that on. No problem. I have no problem. Total bill, you get about $100, okay? Our order included such classic finger food as pot pies and mashed potatoes and creamy pasta. Now, I know some people, I don't know how you do things in your own house, Og, but I use silverware for those sort of things, you know? I'm not scooping up the pot.
Doing the toddler idea.
especially down at Leif Erikson Flower Garden. That would be just magnificent. Me eat taters. I usually have silverware with this. And you would think to yourself, if I call into an order on a place that's demanding I do curbside pickup, that they would check to see if I need silverware. They did not give me silverware. They did not. And so we get out to – now, and I didn't even think about this. I mean, okay, it's not some fast food restaurant. It's not some $20, $30 cafeteria meal, you know, sort of thing where they got to pick up, you know, silverware. And it's a $100 meal on a curbside pickup with food that's not finger food. And they didn't give me silverware. So we get to Leif Erikson Park, and I open up, and of course, the expletives I let fly in those flower gardens was magnificent. But it's Duluth, so basically it's like crickets down there swearing. So, needless to say, sorry, Duluth, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, I was not happy. So I drive back up to this restaurant. I call them when I get there and say, you forgot my silverware. Oh, well, do you want some?
No.
Well, I've got a pot pie. What do you think? Well, where are you now? Well, I'm right outside your restaurant. So at that moment, I already know. Blackwoods went in and said, who is the least ranking employee we've got? We've got to send them out there with silverware to Red Hot Steamin' Dude in the car. Here comes some 15-year-old server, comes to the door. Now, all she has to do is say, sorry, here's the silverware, our apologies. Once again, I don't think that I've really crossed any lines here. She comes to the door, she goes, the next time you come here, you should ask for silverware. I said, we had a pot pie, I paid $100, I shouldn't have to. And I kind of screeched out of the parking lot. Well, with some thuds. I mean, they needed to repay it. But, you know, it's like there. Now, I will say this. Once again, that wild rice patty sandwich, delicious. I will go back for that. And I understand the plight of the minimum wage worker. And, yes, I completely understand this situation. But this is more about the restaurant. But it did not stop the insane amount of grief I got from some listeners about how dare you destroy the planet with some plastic silverware, Matt. How dare you? Like, I'm bringing, what do you think I'm doing? Like some medieval serf roaming the land with my carved spoon waiting for food to drop in my lap? I mean, no, you do that. This is their setup. This is not mine. How you killed a penguin, Matt, with that plastic fork of yours. I recycled everything. I'm pretty religious about recycling. And they actually had, at the park there, they actually had recycling bins. So I was able to take advantage of that. But still, I cannot believe how many people were angry at me because I apparently wanting plastic silverware from a restaurant who served me food that you generally do not eat with your hands. Pasta, soup. We can do a whole list of we can do a show on the list of foods you generally don't eat with your hands here. And yet, I took more grief from that decision than I have in a long time because people were just angry at me because I destroyed the planet by ordering food to go and apparently didn't eat it like it was a blueberry pie eating festival.
You could have gone face first into the food, then you don't
that
get it all over
great. In hindsight, if I wasn't so mad, I might have just done that and taken a bunch of pictures. Here we are, the family eating. Me face planting into a pile of red russet potatoes.
Oh, that's your Christmas card picture right there. The whole family with food all over their face.
So would the standard person in Duluth walk past me with disgust or say, hey, where'd you get that? Where? I don't know. Duluth, I love you. I do. You're a fantastic town. You got some good things up there. This is not about that. It's not a rip on Duluth. It's just it was comical how bad it just kept getting in Duluth that day. How often do you get up there?
Not that often. I'm trying to think of the last time I was up there. It might have been actually the when I was working for McEntee doing the 2018 Republican convention.
Oh, that's right.
That might have been the last time I was up there.
The Loon Ball Express.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, things get better since then. I was, you know, it's unfortunate because Duluth is a town that's trying to kind of, I think like a lot of towns, recover from the pandemic and kind of get their feet back under them. They've got a lot going for them. But I think that one of the things that town could definitely do is, you know, go back to some of those great buildings that are there. They're empty right now. Revisit them. Figure out some way to bring them back. Because that's really the culture of Duluth. And it's hard to see the good buildings that are there that are empty getting torn down and kind of nondescript, non-character buildings getting built in their place. Or the ones that are getting left behind are the ones that do look like some sort of military fortress of just poured concrete walls, like a Canadian shopping mall, for God's sakes. And so – and by the way, if you've ever been to a Canadian shopping mall, you know, especially the ones in the smaller towns, you know what I mean. But I just – I think that it's kind of, you know, it really does. I'm glad I went. I want to encourage people to get on out this weekend, get out these weekends who are coming up. We got a lot of communities that have some of their festivals, whatever it is, you know, Grand Old Days or whether they're doing a 4th of July Independence Day thing. You know, they got Garlic Festival coming up. It's Gourd Week or whatever they're doing. If you can, get out into these towns, Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, small towns across Minnesota, Butternut. We've got to go down to Butternut and see if they got Butternut's got a weekend festival. Because if it's a Butternut Squash Festival, I will eat that food without a fork. I don't care what you put in front of me. I almost said something really wildly inappropriate that was sexual about Butternut Squash, but you know where I'm going. I'm not a shy man. Is that cinnamon? Anyway, I. But I want to encourage people to get on out and enjoy this because there's a lot. The Land of the Loon Festival going up in Virginia. That was great. That was good fun. I saw that going up there. And, you know, they got Blueberry Festival in Ely, although they need more blueberries. I'm just going to be honest with you. Across the state, they've got a lot of great things. When was the last time were you ever in a town that had one of those festivals going on?
Oh, I don't know. I'm thinking last one. It might have been one of the county fairs. I'm trying to think.
Good fun. Oh, and they run those county fairs in the summer so they can get ready for that.
What county is New Prague in? It was
Steel,
that one, yeah.
Steel? Is that Steel or Rice?
It might be Steel down there. Yeah.
God, if I pulled that one on my caboose, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was solid. Yeah, yeah.
That's why it was in Newport. Oh,
that yeah, was a fun little festival down there. Yeah, yeah. I was down there streaming a pro wrestling event, of all things. But then, yeah, saw a little of the festivities down there as well. So, good fun.
I might go to the Edina 4th of July celebration because I hear they throw gold bars. You know, honey, we're out of gold bars. Get those highly inferior emeralds. We're going to throw those to the heathens. There you go. Happy Independence Day.
You do know that there is... It's not a good situation in Edina right now if you heard about what happened.
The logo?
Yeah.
Oh, I can just – is there going to be a protest? Oh, my. Could there be a protest?
Well, God, you remember what they did with the Hornets like 10 years ago.
No. It's not the Hornets. It's the Hornets. What the hell are you guys complaining about? Is there an inflection I'm missing here? No, Matt. It's not the Hornets. It's the Hornets. You people really have a lot of time on your hands. You know, you have a lot of time on your hands. Hobbies, painting, sculpting, gardening. It's lovely. Trust me. You want to do that. Maybe not hire it out to have someone else do it. But just you can find something to do. I hope they throw gold bars. That would be a lovely Edina festival. I'd come back. I'd come back. Thank you very much. I appreciate you filling in for me.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
When I come back, I got one quick story here. Once again, Stein joining us towards the bottom of the hour. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We got to get to a lot of other things as well today. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, the food in Duluth was tasty. That sandwich was delicious, but yeah, it was just weird how that kind of fell apart. And like I said, people getting mad at me is like, how dare you, Matt? Okay. Yeah, Sandra, thank you very much. No, Duluth, I actually have had pretty good food in Duluth. And I got to tell you, you go up to Grandma's up there and they get that wild rice turkey tetrazzini. God, I love that. Well, that's fantastic. And Lisa chiming in, I love butternut squash. If the town of Butternut does a butternut squash days, I might have to head down there. It's got to be later summer, though. Maybe even in September. We'll have to check that out. Maybe we do a listener trip down. Where are we going? Some radio stations take you to like Acapulco, take you to Hawaii. We're going to Butternut, Minnesota just to gorge ourselves on butternut squash. Yumbo.
But hey, it's a good idea because it keeps the money local.
And there you go. See, we could give money to some other place. No, we stay here. Minnesota kicks caboose. If you have not spent time in Minnesota, get out and enjoy Minnesota. Minnesota is great. It is awesome. And I just experienced it. It was lovely. So one thing I do have to, and I'm going to go track this down over the long weekend. So I was up north, and I got to talking to some locals. There apparently was some sort of meeting, and like I said, this is secondhand, and secondhand. So very hesitant to share this, but it was an eyebrow raiser to say the least. Where there apparently was just a little community rah-rah meeting about the pipeline that was going to happen. I'm not sure where this was happening. I think it was in southern St. Louis County or something like that. And the person who was representing the pipeline, now I'm not sure if that was from Enbridge or if that was like a union person or someone, but someone was there talking it up, and they're doing the usual talking points of this pipeline, of the Line 3 pipeline. And they're talking about how this is going to be great, it's going to be all the job, blah, 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 blah. And someone, and the one person in the crowd noticed they hadn't talked about the fact that Enbridge is, and the people is, we're going to clean up any mess we're going to clean up. And says, and of course Enbridge is going to clean up any mess, right? And the company is going to pick up any mess. And apparently for the first time, these people at this meeting, the person comes up and says, well, here's the deal. The state of Minnesota is actually going to clean up in some cases because the rules will say this. To which everyone in the room was like, what? What do you mean? That was kind of the first time they had heard this being said in any kind of capacity, that all of a sudden it wasn't anymore about, oh, we're going to make sure we're perfectly clean. It was, well, the state of Minnesota, because of the politicians, well, there are some legal ways that they basically will have to clean up if there's a mess. But it will get cleaned up one way or the other. To which the person said, yeah, but that's at taxpayer expense, and no one has said that before. So, well, that's not our problem. It was something with the law. Now, once again, I want to be very careful here because be very clear that this was explained to me to a point as in regards to a, you know, kind of a secondhand knowledge as secondhand knowledge. So I'm not sure. I'm going to track down if this meeting actually did happen and what exactly was said. because if they're already starting to change their tone on this and sort of saying, yeah, we're not going to be responsible, I think that that has to be factored into some things. And once again, you know, I feel as if Republican politicians need to, you know, remember the oopsie law. Republicans passed that, that if basically if they just yell oopsie, that the state is going to be responsible for cleaning up their mess. They just have to scream oopsie. That's all they have to do. That's Republicans. Thank you, oopsie law. 952-946-6205. A lot on the budget. I'll try to get to more of this in a little bit later on. The state budget, I should say. I think one of the things, there are two things that happened that I just want to point out. First one, I want to be very clear. I'm grateful. Senator Lindsey Port did message me. I'd asked the question because it was very hard to keep track of the budget process while I was up north on a cell phone. And there are some things I'm not happy with. There are some things I am happy with. I'll be very clear about this. I think there are wins and losses, but that's sausage making. That's politics. And you can't expect one side, and especially in a divided government, to get their way. So I'm okay to a point with some things. The one thing I am most happy with is how the Republicans were trying to basically make legal immunity for businesses that had broken the pandemic emergency rules to give them legal immunity so that they did not have to pay any of the penalties or fines that they were incurred by them being selfish jackasses and jeopardizing their community by not following protocols, while so many other businesses did. And that's the key. And that's one thing the Republicans in this state like to leave out of that entire narrative, that the vast majority of businesses, even if they didn't like it, followed the rules and kept their communities safe. And I kept saying, DFL, if you go along with this, then what's going to happen is you are going to get a situation where if, God forbid, another pandemic happens, no one is going to follow any pandemic safety rules. No one will. Because why? Because there's no consequences from it. Well, it sounds like Gazelka and those crew was desperately trying to get rid of the emergency powers. They were desperately pushing this. It sounds like they were willing to give up a lot of things in the crime bill to try to get that done. Wall sniffed it out, got the – and once again, and I do want to mention Paul Gazelka's attempt at saying, it wasn't him. It was me. It was me. It was just me. I did this. This is the benchmark of my entire governor campaign. Don't take this away from me. It was me, 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 me. That was Paul Gazelka, basically. The reality is what Tim Walz did is the governor went to the federal government, said, I need the extension on the benefits. The government gave him a waiver, got the extension. He felt as if that was the only reason he was going to keep emergency powers in place was to get that additional federal benefits. The federal government was willing to give it to him. He basically stepped aside. The House Democrats crafted the bill. The Republicans tried to say, well, the legislator did it. Well, no, that was Governor Walz. And yes, Governor Walz had at one point said he wanted to keep emergency powers till August 31st. But he was very clear that he wanted to keep that for the federal benefits, which he got. And the minute he got what he needed, he willing to step aside. And Governor Walz relinquished his power, and it was a formality. And by the way, if I'm not mistaken, the vote to get rid of his emergency powers happened at mid-month. This would have been attached to a bill. Walz could have vetoed that, and they wouldn't have been able to override this. So the only way this happens is if Governor Walz initiates it, which he did. Final thing I want to make sure I mention, and that's the way I understand it. And like I said, I was reading most of this on a cell phone. So the last thing I want to mention about the budget thing is I think the Democrats missed an opportunity because I feel as if I like the anti-lobbying bill, although that was Drazkowski, wasn't it, Draz, that brought that bill in saying you can't be a lobbyist and be serving in the legislature, which was him taking a direct shot at Kurt Dowd, which was interesting, but it passed pretty much unanimously outside of Doubt. You know, he wasn't there. He didn't vote. But the Democrats, I think, had an opportunity. I think they could have probably on that tax bill added the refinery safety bill. They could have added the, hey, why not have cops who are white supremacist bill and then gavel close, thrown that tax bill over at the Senate and said, either you pass it or you don't, and gotten a few more things. Now, Melissa Hortman and the rest of the leadership in the House are not like the Republican Party and generally like to do things the way that politics and legislators do things. But don't fool yourself for one second. If the Republicans were in charge of that House, it was the other way. They would have added 1,000 poison pills to that bill, that budget bill, and then passed it off to the Senate and said, well, if you veto it, that's on you. And I think getting those two things, demanding that police officers in the state of Minnesota are not part of white supremacy groups, gee willikers, what a high bar that is, and that refinery safety bill, which was a good bill. Carla Bingham, nice job. That was a good bill. That should have been put in there, and it did pass initially, and then the Republicans changed their mind. I don't know why. Well, I'm going to guess lobbying money. That would be my guess. But needless to say, I think you need to play hardball a little bit harder next time. Needless to say. 952-946-6205. Stein, a lot of national news to get to when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert and noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books as well as TotallyIowa.com. The Iowa Business Report he does down in Iowa on a daily basis and his weekend show as well there. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
Matthew, it is so good to welcome you back.
For one day before a four-day weekend. You know, it's not my first rodeo, dude.
How many hours do I get per month? Now, if I carry the two, thank God I have three kids who are smart. Okay, I'll just come back for a day. Good for you.
It was a long year last year. I needed this. Okay, so when I was out, I wanted to bring up a story, and I sent you this link here. You and I both have spent a lot of time in small town Iowa. There's a lot of unique, you know, challenges and circumstances that go with this. Obviously, a divergent population where you have a lot of older people and then younger people. As a lot of people leave that small town and go away, you have the harsh nature of trying to keep a local downtown going, especially in an age where people will drive 20 miles to a big box store and it wipes out community stores for a 20-mile radius, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, you have a quality of life which really is very undervalued. I saw that firsthand. You get the kids generally have a great school experience because everyone has to do everything, which is a lot of fun. And you know, of course, you can't beat the pork chops and corn for goodness sakes. They're absolutely delicious and a lot of great community values that are in these towns. But one of the problems that we have, and I know this is something that I've talked about before when I was down in Iowa doing radio. And as well, I know a lot of people down there have talked about it, and that is you're in a farming state. There's a lot of runoff of agricultural byproducts that happens. And it sounds like they're getting to a point now in some parts of Iowa where these water supplies, especially in communities of need, they're really taking a hit. I know West Des Moines, which is not a small town per se, their water was undrinkable. I have friends that live over there. They'd come to our house in Ames and fill up water bottles because the water was so bad down there.
And you charged them a lot, didn't you?
I didn't realize they were using my outside hose. So why is the water running? But it does bring up an interesting point. I'd love to get your thoughts on this from being down there. How bad is the water? I mean, is it something that is becoming a worse problem down there? Because obviously it's something that goes with farming culture is you do get this runoff, and unfortunately it does seem to be causing some problems in some of these rivers.
There are – it's a myriad of problematic situations that we're talking about here. You have areas – and let's just talk about West Des Moines, suburbs of Des Moines, the area west of I-35, all right? It expanded greatly. It's the logical expansion of so-called metropolitan area. The infrastructure was not there to handle that many people. And so they have been playing catch-up for a long time. You also have problems where so many of these natural waterways, rivers, all right, flow into these large population areas. And the focus has been on how to keep it clean in those areas. There's a project that just kicked off 2 weeks ago, the Central Iowa Water Quality Infrastructure Project. Apparently, they couldn't think of a longer name. Mm-hmm. But in any case, the concept, again, is to make it better for Polk and Dallas counties, these areas with the urban sprawl. Well, that's fine, but so much attention, Matt, and this is your fundamental point, so much attention has been paid on we got to make it nice for the metro areas. Well, why don't you deal with it at the source?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. The problem is, in the project that I just mentioned, that is one of the things that they're doing, is that they're putting in all sorts of tiling. They're putting in all sorts of buffers at the farm field level, saturated buffers, bioreactors, et cetera, to protect the water quality and limit some of the runoff so that what they're able to do, therefore, is to prevent it at the source. Well, the problem is twofold. One, as I mentioned, there's so much focus on the major metropolitan areas. That's all a relative phrase, but the major metropolitan areas. These smaller areas are not even getting a sniff, and that's where the stuff is coming in at its most potent level.
Mm-hmm.
You then have, and this is a different quality of life issue. I live in a rural area. I live on 9 acres of woods because I hate people. Well, people hate me too, so it's pretty good, you know. But I mean, I like living in the country. I drive 20 minutes. I'm into one of the larger cities in the state. It's not like your commute, but the point is I've got a great situation, and I thank God for that every day. But the problem is so I like that quality of life. There are people in these metro areas where they want to use the rivers for recreational activities. Well, that means you have to alter the landscape. You've got to put up dams here. You've got to do other things there because, you know, you want a whitewater course in downtown Waterloo. Honest to goodness, that's on the planning board, okay? Because the motorized scooters all over downtown wasn't bad enough. Apparently, they want recreational activity and a whitewater course. Well, when you're using it, and you know, when I lived in the city of Waverly, where literally the Cedar River comes through it, they were keeping the water level high for recreation in the northern area, but then what happens when you have the potential for either spring flooding because of snow melt or heavy rain in the summer? Well, because they've kept it artificially high, and then they go, oh, let's open the dams, and then it totally floods the south area, mm-hmm. where if they would have just let the river be the river, you'd have had a more moderated flow. So you've got all of these competing interests, and who winds up suffering? The folks in the smaller areas that, as you noted, are desperately trying to survive, because when a Casey's General Store goes into town, the local pizza place goes out of business.
Yeah.
Just another one of the examples.
Yeah, and we also have to factor in not only these mid-level towns. I mean, Iowa is small town. I mean, when you go there, that's the iconic feel you get. You go out to these farming communities that are there. These communities have been hammered for 30, 40 years. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I went into a town and there would be, you know, of the eight business fronts that are left, there's two that are going and one doesn't look like it's going to make it too much longer. And the last thing these small towns need is a water quality issue where all of a sudden – and people who are already financially strained are having to get bottled water or having to limit shower time because of exposure to potential chemicals – you know, it's a tough problem because Iowa produces so much crops and they do it in a generally fairly chemical-friendly way, whether you like that or not. That's just how it does happen. Mm-hmm. So the question then becomes, what do you do? Where's the sacrifice go? And if it comes down to, back in the 80s, we had that the small farmer versus the larger farmer and the rise of the corporate farm. Well, now if it becomes a situation where it's the corporate farm versus the small town, well, I can already tell you who's going to win that fight.
Well, and you're seeing it also play out separately in the cattle industry. There are, what, four large producers. They're creating monopolistic situations. It is harming producers. It is harming consumers. It's harming small, independent production houses. I mean, this is the kind of thing, because it all comes down to this. We all want cheap food.
Yeah,
all right?
Me too.
I mean, and you and I talked about this, it seems to me, when COVID was really bad and these bad actors, the Tysons of the world, et cetera, didn't care that their employees were getting sick and dying. That's my statement, not yours.
Yes.
It's also what's in a number of federal lawsuits. But
agreed.
I think what you said at the time that you agreed is, hey, look, we want cheap pork. And so, you know, you're not going to have too many consumers say, I would love for the water in every small town in Minnesota and Iowa to be pure if it means I now have to spend $10 a pound for ground beef, as an example, right? You know, because we, you know, I looked the other day at sweet corn. Dozen ears of sweet corn is like $6. When did that happen?
Yeah.
How long? I mean, truly, I understand it's a little higher if it's the early crop and all that, but it's like, didn't I used to drive past places that said $3? Because I thought that was hideous.
$2 for a dozen. I remember that when I was down there in Eldora. I lived in Eldora for a while. Yeah, $2 for a dozen. You get, I mean, like, okay, I'm going to be eating this for a while. But you know, it's you're exactly right now. And we'll move away from this because we've got some national issues I want to get to. But sure. You know, I think one of the things I really do, you and I are going to focus on over the next year is we're going to talk more ag issues because I think it is just a crime we don't talk more about this. And there is a fight that's going out there about where this country is going in regards to food production, because you bring up a good point. Yeah, we all love iconic small town America. We love the farmers. We love the idea here, but that doesn't exist. And it's corporate farms and the desire for cheap food, which is driving a lot of what's going on right now. And that desire is not going to change. That is changing the character and the culture of rural America dramatically. And the country we're going to have in 20 years is going to be very different from what we got right now.
And two quick things on it before we transition. You drive through certainly my state. I don't get out much. Remember, I'm the recluse. But, I mean, I drove across the state last week, and all of these farm fields with wind turbines.
Yeah.
And the farmers are grateful to have it because they're getting paid rent. All right? Well, it changes the character of everything. And especially with absentee owners. Sure, put a cell phone tower in my field. What do I care, right? Because they just cash the checks. And I talked to a farmer who's also a seed dealer last week or 2 weeks ago. And she was talking about in the 20 years that she has been a seed dealer, the number of customers has dramatically dropped. The number of acres farmed and therefore, in essence, the amount of seed they sell is the same. But it's consolidation. It's this family getting out of it, this family now doing more. That's changing the character of absolutely everything.
Very corporate, unfortunately. All right, let's turn really quick to the SCOTUS ruling on Arizona, that they can basically impose their voting restrictions down there. There is a very – when it comes to – I think the most conservative thing that the Supreme Court has done is basically dismantle voting rights, the Voting Rights Act. They have definitely gone after that, and that's a Roberts thing. He really is very much against that. I don't know if we're at the point where there are five Supreme Court justices that would rule that if some state passed a law that said that property owners were the only ones that could vote, that they would go with it. But there are a lot of people that are traditionalist as far as the country, and that's what it used to be. I wouldn't be surprised. And the reality is there definitely seems to be this mentality of – and I want to be careful how I say this. The Supreme Court is not necessarily saying we don't want people to vote. What they're kind of saying is states have the rights to basically impose whatever rules they want to, and they might be draconian, but they have the rights to do that as long as it's not too draconian. You know what I mean? So your thoughts on that ruling?
Well, here's the bigger implication, and I'm not ignoring the ruling, but here's the bigger implication. That's not good news for those who are in favor of H1 or S1. Because the fundamental premise of the Supreme Court's decision is that this is a republic and each state monitors its elections and its votes separately. The concept of having more consistent national standards, I'm not going to go so far as to say nationalizing elections. That's a talking point that some use without reading any of the bills. The concept of having more consistent rules nationwide, that's not something that, from this ruling, it looks like the court would necessarily adopt. All right, so this is the tricky part. Let's say H1 or S1 or something very close to it passes and is signed into law. All right, does that in and of itself now negate these state laws? That's the idea of it. Well, will the U.S. Supreme Court say this is a republic and therefore these are sovereign states? And so you've overreached? Or will they say, as they do in certain areas, the federal government has the right to foreclose state option? They can preempt the field. And that's what's, again, this ruling is not at first glance something that those who advocate for H1 or S1 would want to see. but they have not foreclosed it. Let's put it that way.
It is interesting. We should mention that the transgender rights ruling on the Virginia case, which basically, by the way, led to a Minnesota school frantically settling with a case of their own, where they stood up for transgender rights. This is a very interesting Supreme Court right now. This by far is their most conservative stance, but this court has shown some shockingly progressive rulings in the last two times and that have been a little bit of stunners, if you want to know the truth.
Yeah, they've... The one thing you can say for the Roberts Court, from the very beginning, not terribly predictable. He in particular, not terribly predictable. And in one respect, that's a good thing because justices should not be politically rigid. All right. Politics should not enter into it at all, quite honestly. But it has not been as predictable, and I can tell you there is one former president who hangs out in Florida who's saying, wait a second, I appointed three of these people, and they're not doing what I would have wanted them to do on a whole manner of issues, including the last election. So it's not a predictable court, and this is what's really interesting to see them take this little turn, and the question is it the aberration of the moment? Or will it spill over into rulings in the next session of the court with new arguments starting on the first Monday of October?
We'll have to see because, once again, it is by far the most conservative. Voting rights is the most conservative thing these guys have been putting out. They've been consistent on that, but everything else has been – and it's been some really weird groups working together that you would not expect to be working together. But they come to their conclusions from their own direction, and that's the Supreme Court. So let's take a break. We'll come on back. Perp Walk, the Trump Organization. We got to talk about that. Jeff Stein joining us on a Thursday, 952-946-6201. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. Jeff Stein joining us on July 1st. By the way, should mention Robert Burrill coming up at 5:05. Sven Sundgaard to talk weather at 5:35. Jeff, there was a little bit of a finally, there was just a slight buildup to this. There were charges filed, the Trump Organization, and against their CFO, Alan Weisselberg, basically, and it seems, I know they're talking politics, and of course it's politics, but you also seem to have $1.7 million of unrecognized compensation directly to the CFO. I've read a lot of opinions on this. I have yet to read someone saying this is nothing because, once again, especially in New York City, they catch you cheating on your taxes. You're pretty much going to go down, and this is pretty much a textbook case. Your thoughts so far on this is, it does seem like it's a fishing expedition. They definitely want to get the bigger fish further up the line.
As I understand, this was a grand jury indictment, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
And I do know, as a lawyer, and as an intelligent person, as does the audience as intelligent people, that in a grand jury situation, prosecutors present evidence, and then the people, the citizens on the grand jury, decide if there will be indictments. Now, obviously, the prosecution is only going to put forward evidence that makes it look like any individual is guilty. So it's not there's no defense, okay? But that having been said, this is not a prosecutor with a political affiliation on a ballot filing a charge. This is a grand jury indictment. So there were people in a sequestered room who looked at this and said, there's enough here to charge. All right. So it's not just a political witch hunt. Now, the one thing that those on the right can say is, well, you're trying to get Trump. I don't see him there in handcuffs. And that doesn't surprise me, though, because in any organization like this, and we've talked about it before, the person at the top insists on plausible deniability, right? I mean, Trump in this case, or anyone in that position, they are insulated by so many layers down the line. So I heard somebody say if this was the McNeil organization, not the Trump organization, then they wouldn't even have filed charges. I don't think I believe that. Is there a higher profile? Are they hoping to squeeze this guy? Well, of course they are. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean A, that he'll roll, or B, that there is anything, because they laid it out there. So it's not nothing. It's absolutely not nothing, but it is also not your dream of seeing number 45 in cuffs with his suit coat draped over his wrist so that you won't see the shackles.
Well, and it should be mentioned, history, these cases take decade, maybe plus, to get really kind of this. And we have a tendency of looking back and thinking it happens very quickly. It doesn't. I will say this, the Ivanka revelation, the fact that they have her actually, that some of the investigation has pointed that she did commit perjury on the inauguration fundraising thing. And that all of a sudden, now we're starting, if they do have a perjury charge, that she was under oath, and which she was, and she said this, that becomes a little bit more, if you're the Trump, you're Trump, now all of a sudden that's a knock on the door. If all of a sudden Ivanka could be possibly in legal trouble. But I mean, my guess is that she and Jared will no longer be in the United States before too long, because they don't seem to be getting along with Daddy anymore.
Well, there was a disconnect there, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
It might have been in early January. But no, and perjury is what brings everybody down. Tax evasion is what brings everybody down.
Mail fraud,
and
yeah.
I could cite you Martha Stewart to Al Capone. All right. So, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Martha Stewart got in trouble for lying. Al Capone got in trouble for tax evasion. It's not what people necessarily think. And so, you know, you can't just dismiss. You cannot just dismiss tax cases and say, oh, it's just money, it's just taxes.
Yeah.
Because that is indicative, potentially, of something else. And, lastly, if it's so good, then why is there a crime against it?
Happy Independence Day, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Bless you, my friend.
All
right.
Hour two up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Once again, back for one day. We got a four-day weekend coming up here. If you're wondering why I tell Stein Happy Independence Day, he and a few people in Iowa are very adamant about the fact that you do not call it the 4th of July. Even though it doesn't move, it is always on the 4th of July. But they say it's not the 4th of July, it's Independence Day. Okay, so that's why I say Independence Day. But I hope you have a wonderful Independence Day. And once again, we will be back with brand new live shows starting on Tuesday as we run through July. 952-946-6205. Robert Burrell, last time we were here, he joined us to talk about his Acme Comedy Company run. He is currently in it. He started yesterday. He's got a show tonight at 8. He's got two shows on Friday, 7 and 9:30. Two shows on Saturday, 7 and 9:30 at Acme. Robert Burrell, kind enough to join us once again to talk about his run, his headlining run over at Acme. Hey, Robert.
How's it going, Matt?
Going well. How did last night go? Doing the live show in front of the crowd?
Yeah, great. It's back to regular seating. It was about 100 people, I think, and they were. It was nice and tight packed, and it was great. It was great to get in that room again with more of an audience, and it was great. They were a hot crowd.
Now, and the thing which is, and I tell people this, Robert has been with us, one of the funniest people I know. He has been coming on this show for 10-plus years, one of the oldest guests I've actually had coming on this show. People, you want to go see him. This is his headlining run over at Acme. This is a guy, he's going to be known nationwide. I have no doubt about that. Be there when you can say, I was there first. Do you have a T-shirt yet? Is that even possible?
It's funny you say that, because one of the MCs, the first half of the show was an MC showcase, where it's the four new hires there, Elise Cole, Ira Ford, James Stanley, and Sean Napstead, that I host, and they each do like 10 minutes. And Ira wore an old shirt I used to have, because my now wife, Becky, is actually a grandmother, so I had some bits about that on my second album, and I joked about how she was hella fertile, and that was a shirt that I sold. It was just a black shirt that said Hella Fertile, and Ira wore it during his set, and I joked about it, and after a woman is like, I will take one of those shirts if you have them, and sure enough, I had a few in my car, so if any of your listeners do come to the show and would like a shirt that says Hella Fertile, I do have a few left.
Get them, and you can say, and those will be collector's items, people. And I do once again want to make sure I mention this. Tonight at Acme, 8 o'clock tonight, 7 and 9:30 on Friday, 7 and 9:30 on Saturday. It is a hot time. I mean, I think it's a good time to do this, because the reality is it's been so dang hot. I don't I know a lot of people like to go outside and eat, but the last thing I want to do is go outside and eat when it gets really hot like this. So it's good to get people inside. It has been, have you been talking at all about the heat? Has that been an issue, something you've been bringing up?
I don't know if it was the last show. I definitely, at some point in some show that I did within the last few days, I joked that it's been so hot out now that the Minneapolis police are breaking into a sweat before shooting an unarmed person. So that's the line that I've been using. You there, Matt? Are you there? Are you there,
yeah,
Matt?
I'm there.
Hello? Did I walk the host of the show?
No, you have me. You had me at sweat.
Yeah.
That's nice. And actually topical, unfortunately. But yeah, at the same time. It's brutal out there. I'm of course a sweater, which is always great. Mm-hmm. And that's nothing I like better than just walking from my car into a building and looking like I just did a triathlon. There is no comfortable way when it gets really hot to be around other human beings.
No, but fortunately, Acme's got a very good air conditioning.
Yes.
It's nice and cool in there. Great drinks and good comedy. Not just myself, but like the MCs are very good. There's a reason they got hired, and they're very funny. And then after they're done, then I get my crack at it, and it's topical. It's biting. I mean, I kind of gave you a taste a little bit with that joke, but I think the audience should come, and your audience is perfect for it because they're informed. They know what's going on, and as long as they don't mind a few little dark detours throughout the course of the set, then I think they'll have a really good time.
Congratulations, by the way, on the wedding. I did not mention that.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention that. I did, of course, for everyone out there, I bought him a knife set. And I'm not joking when I say this. Before I buy a knife set for any married couple, I take a look at the couple. And I'd make the determination, mm-hmm. Is this gift going to come back and haunt me? And I do not feel it will. Congratulations. Enjoy your perfectly sliced vegetables from here on out.
I was about to say yes. If things do take a turn for the worse, then I can assure you that if it is a knife, if it is one of your knives that ends me, then I will be the one haunting you. If that's the case, you'll feel a cool breeze and you'll wake up. It'll be me like Jacob Marley in A Christmas Carol. And I'll be like, really, Matt? Knives? Couldn't have got us, I don't know, a toaster? She can't kill me with a toaster.
Never dull, Matt, right? Never dull. Good thinking. Thank God that was 30 years later.
Yeah. Why not a pistol? Huh, boy? Why even, you know, let's get rid of the pretense.
Well, congratulations. I hope you enjoy them.
Thank you. No, they're great knives. They work a little too well, quite frankly.
Have you wounded yourself?
No. I just mean like they're very sharp, and in the vein of if things do happen to go south, it's I'm not looking forward to how sharp those knives are.
Beautiful. All right. I'm so proud, man. I'm so happy to see you doing this run. I want everyone to go on out, catch Robert's gig tonight, tomorrow 2 shows, Saturday 2 shows. I'll link to everything out there. You want to be there because Robert's going places. This is going to be the place when you're like, I remember when I saw him over at Acme on the headlining run over there on the 4th of July. Go get this. And once again, how many total T-shirts do you have before you will be sold out? Like 12 or so?
Yeah, no, I don't want to have not that many. I would say 6, maybe. I did a lot of gigs in Wisconsin and the Dakotas when I first got them. So I'm really just down to larges, mediums, and smalls at this point. I've sold completely out of XL and XXL and those, especially for, you know, hella fertile. You know, if we're talking third trimester, you're going to want one of the larger ones. So it's.
So there's guys and
maybe it could be a headband. Size-wise, you know, you can slice them up. Like, if you pay for the shirt, it's your shirt. Like, if you want to, you know, just wear it as a headband or, I don't know, depending on how big you are, some sort of leg brace, then feel free.
There are guys in Wisconsin wearing, you know, I'm going to presume 4X shirts that say hella fertile, you're saying.
Yeah. It's more so, yeah, I think it's more so for the men. That wasn't my intent, but that's usually who buys them.
No, oh, you got a fan base, man.
Yep.
AcmeComedyCompany.com. AcmeComedyCompany.com. Get tickets. Well, for tonight's show, do they just go to the door or they have to get them online? Do you know?
No, they can get them at the door. It's always safer to get them online. I think if they're aiming for the weekend, they should probably go online to make sure they have them. But as far as tonight it goes, I mean, you can get them either way, and you should be safe at the door.
All righty. Robert, tonight, once again, at 8, tomorrow, 7 and 9:30, on Saturday, 7 and 9:30, Robert Baril. Robert, all my best on this. Good luck on the show. We will. I'll check in with you and make sure, once again, look on the social media. I'll put all the links out to Acme to make sure people go get tickets. Thank you, Robert. All my best, man.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Right back at you.
Take care. Robert Baril, headlining over at Acme. Very proud. Very proud. Robert Baril at Acme. Once again, tonight at 7. Excuse me, tonight at 8. Tonight at 8. Tomorrow at 7 and 9:30. On Saturday, 7, 9:30. I think they're closed on the 4th. So there you go. Go catch that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. One of the things I want to bring up in regards to the budget deals that just happened here is that you've got to do a better job. I'm a little disappointed at times that the DFL doesn't do a better job of selling. As a matter of fact, right now, you need to get out there. If you're the DFL, you need to go on narrative control. And I want to give you a great example of this. The state of Minnesota will pay Canadian Energy. This is part of one of the bills here. The state of Minnesota will pay Canadian energy company Enbridge nearly $30 million to cover Northern County's cost from tax case settlement. The deal, a last-minute addition to the state tax budget passed by the legislature early Thursday, is a big relief for 13 counties. They were each set to pay Enbridge between $91,000 and $5.6 million after a tax court ruled the company was owed a refund because the state overvalued the property from 2012 to 2016, which, you know, once again, is just kind of, you know, one of the things that does happen. I'm happy that the state saw this through because it's not the county's fault that the valuation was off, said Beltrami County Commissioner Reed Olson. The county owed Enbridge more than $2.2 million. The state has saved Beltrami County and other counties from having to be worried about this bankruptcy. Now, who do you think in Beltrami County is going to get all the credit for this? Democrats who had to pass it out of the House? I mean, every Republican in the House could have voted for this, but if you didn't have some Democrats voting along with it, this wouldn't have passed. The governor, the Democratic governor signing this bill? Of course not. They're going to say, Republicans saved us again. No, they didn't. Now, I'm not saying that they didn't help. It just is, this was a concerted joint effort of Democrats and Republicans, DFLers and Republicans, to pass this bill. When we had Ingebrigtsen, Senator Ingebrigtsen, saying that he wanted to shut down clean cars, and I told the Democrats, the DFL, do not pander to this. Do not even go down this road. And the reason why I say this is that if he gets you to do this, and he shuts down the state, or he shuts down the state, no matter what, the only way he gets held accountable is if he did shut down the state parks closed, people are saying, why don't we have businesses coming into the state? Because, oh, well, Ingebrigtsen shut down the state, then he'd get grief. Any other outcome, he would get credit for if a tough guy negotiator. And you want to know the truth is, one of the reasons why DFLers are afraid to run in some of these districts is because the message that we put out is so metro-based that we do not look at the outstate districts and try to fight for them. Right now, what was the beginning of this show? I talked about the fact that the heat, the climate change, the undeniable climate change that is going on right now has wiped out fishing in northern Minnesota. I should say, once again, I caught bass, I caught northerns, but I didn't catch any walleye, I didn't catch any panfish, because they're gone. Weeds are growing in lakes. I have never seen weeds growing because of this heat. And yet, DFLers cannot get up there and say, well, this is climate change, without someone saying, you're making that up. Now, where'd all the fish go and why is it so hot? Because you are so bad at getting up there and getting message out that you're getting drowned out because some Republican or some traitor that used to be with the DFL will go on out there and say, look at that mumbo jumbo. And everyone up there goes, yeah, mumbo jumbo. They don't want to look at the truth. I mean, take a look at Texas, for God's sakes. Texas is a textbook example of the failure of Republican policy. But most of those Republicans will easily win re-election because the Democrats down in Texas are just so bad at taking their faults and getting people to go and vote Democrat. The DFL has a lot to be proud of that is sellable in outstate Minnesota. Broadband, education, health and human services. And even on the policing bill, when they went and stood up for, got a pay raise for the police, and they got an anti-doxing bill for the police. That they went out there. Those did not happen without Democrats. And yet, will any DFLer go on out there and be able to sell that they helped out and they backed up the law enforcement? Of course they won't. Not in the rural parts of the state where that stuff sells. You got a messaging issue. And today, you want to win in 2022, today is the day. You get off your butts. Stop patting yourself on the back on the minimum wins you got on these budgets and get out there and get to these summer festivals and get to these communities and start trying to win these elections. You're going to have a major redistricting. It's going to push a lot of seats in towards the metro area. It will. A lot of districts are going to change. Don't just give up on them and say, well, if we could get that two districts, we're going to have a one-vote majority. No, 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 no. You want to win or do you want to hope you win? Win. Go out there and start fighting on the Iron Range. Forget about these toxic mines and these pipelines. If we had three brand new foundries in this country, three brand new foundries, every taconite miner in northern Minnesota would be back to work tomorrow. And no one would be begging for a pipeline. No one would be begging for the Boundary Waters to get ripped apart for a toxic mine. We'd have more jobs than we know what to do with on the range. Call up the White House. Say, how do we make this happen? Build a few foundries. Maybe one in Detroit. They could sure use one. How about one in Cleveland? They could sure use one. Hey, how about one in Duluth? We could sure use one. Ship American steel around the country and use American steel made from Minnesota taconite. That doesn't require us toxifying the land beyond the mines we already have, for goodness sakes. They're smart and stupid, and we are not putting forward a smart DFL message. And by the way, one last little bit here before we get into a break here. And Robert, Columbia Heights, hold on. I'll get your call here after the break. But one other quick message, if I can. The Republican Party, multiple times this election cycle, voted down two things which should come back to haunt them. One was the Refinery Safety Act, which I think they realized late, oh, if a refinery blows up and all of a sudden we basically stopped any safety protocols, that's going to make us look bad. That's when they passed the full-time fire departments at refineries bill, which is a good deal as well. That's a good thing. But multiple times, the Republicans, at least three times to my knowledge, this legislative cycle, three times Republicans en masse voted against cops being restricted from being part of white supremacist organizations. The KKK, the Nazis, aggressive biker gangs. Multiple times they said, nope, Nazi cops are okay with them. Nope, the KKK cops are okay with them. Multiple times they did that. You should have a billboard in every Republican district right now saying this guy's okay with Nazi cops because they are. Matt, God, that's aggressive. Grow a spine. You want to win or do you want to pat yourself on the back because you got the third place ribbon? 2022 has started, people. And if you don't start fighting and start fighting for these rural districts where the DFL can win because the DFL delivered to rural Minnesota, if you can't get your message together, well, then I can't help you. But you know what? You got to get out there. You got to try at least. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Robert, also one or two other issues before we get to Sven Sundgaard at the bottom of the hour. We got a lot of weather to talk with him about. We'll get to that in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
connect.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Robert is in Columbia Heights and been holding for a while. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Matt. I just wanted to say thanks for the shout-out to my hometown in Duluth.
Yes.
Sorry you had a bad time with the restaurant.
And the food, and I want to make sure I do say this, that wild rice patty melt that they did, holy God, was that delicious. I will go back for that, because that's one of the things I love about northern Minnesota cuisine. There is a nature to it, and there is a definitive taste to it, and boy, was that great. But, yeah, have you ever eaten a pot pie with your bare hands?
No, never.
Maybe we should have a new contest.
And one more. I went up there for a high school graduation party. And as I was driving up there, my mother took my father into the hospital, who stayed a few nights. They drained about 5 cups of fluid out of his chest cavity.
Yeah.
But he's still alive, so that's a good thing for now.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. Is a good prognosis, at least?
Well, he's 93. He's on oxygen 24/7. He's probably not going to make it past the summer, but we've all been expecting that for the last 25 years.
Yeah. All my best to him. All my best to your family as you go through this. And thank you very much, Robert. I appreciate the phone call. You take care, and I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July weekend, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Take care. 952-946-6205. I will say this. Patrick, just a question for you on 4th of July. You got any plans for this weekend? Anything? I know I'm going to be – I actually got a brand new – propane tank. I'm going to be doing more grilling than I really probably should be. My carbon intake is definitely going to increase dramatically over the next few days. Do you have any plans?
I actually am going to be going where you came from, sort of. I'm going to be in Grand Marais Saturday to Monday.
Nice. Oh, you have a wonderful time. Are you going to buy the old Coast Guard station up there that they're going to sell?
Oh, I didn't know they were going to sell that. I haven't followed that. I've only followed in Duluth. They're trying to sell off. They've been trying to sell off both of those properties on the breakwater in Canal Park.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a tough. If you want a pretty place, I don't know if they are selling it. I know that the Coast Guard's abandoning that station up there, but they usually try to sell those things or they get rid of them. That's a pretty nice little locale there, right on the water. I don't know how close the waves get.
Oh yeah, that definitely is. It's. I think they moved it a little ways up Highway 61 if you're headed up northeast out of town. That's where the new station is.
Yeah.
That old station, yeah, that's a prime piece of real estate you're talking about.
It'll probably be turning into an Arby's. I got some good news. You want to hear good news? On the 4th of July, remember how I've talked about my friend who went through COVID, who is actually in the ICU and actually had a really hard time? He's back home on the 4th. I'm heading over. We're going to have a 4th of July celebration at his house with him. He is recovering. And, yeah, I'm very happy about that. So I'm very excited about doing that.
Good. I'm glad he's able to have you over and get together.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. That's whatever you do for your Independence Day, have a good time with that. A few things I do want to mention here really quick as far as the news goes. Minimum wage in both Minneapolis and St. Paul increased today. Both cities faced ordinances will eventually bring the $15 minimum wage. In Minneapolis, companies with 100 or fewer employees will have to pay $12.50 an hour, an increase of 75 cents. Those with more than 100 workers have to pay $14.25 an hour. That's a dollar hike. In St. Paul, there's a four-tier schedule. Businesses with more than 10,000 employees will stay at $12.50 an hour. Those with 101 to 10,000 employees will go from $11.50 to $12.50. Businesses with 6 to 11, 100 employees will jump from 10 to 11, and micro businesses with 5 or fewer employees will go from $9.25 to $10 an hour. You still got business in St. Paul being $10 an hour? Dude. Okay. I'm just going to say. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And then I did want to mention some safety issues here. There have been just an insane amount of accidents involving motorcycles out there. Please, a lot. It's the time of year. Motorcycles are out there. Keep your eyes on a swivel. Keep an eye out there. Look for the motorcycles. That is, yeah, please do that. I'll also say I've been on Lake Minnetonka. I used to go fishing on Lake Minnetonka. I've told the story of how my dad and I stopped fishing out there in the early 90s because the big boats were too bad and the jet skis were bad. We stopped swimming out there as a family even though they had some of the better beaches, because the jet skiers would come flying on into the beach and would you know, kind of crash onto the shore. I mean, that was awful. And they'd pose and they'd take off, and that's garbage. Well, now we've got something. I got to tell you the truth. I am shocked this does not happen more often. It's a tragic story. In Minnetonka, a juvenile has died after two jet skis collided on the upper lake of Lake Minnetonka on Wednesday evening. According to a press release from Hennepin County Sheriff, the accident happened around 5:45 p.m. People in the nearby boat pulled the victim out of the water, performed CPR. They took the juvenile to the hospital. The release of the identity of the victim will be released by the Hennepin County Medical Examiner. The person on the other jet ski was not hurt. According to the release, alcohol does not seem to be a factor in the accident. It generally isn't. I mean, these guys just go behind the wakes of these big boats and try to jump in their jet skis. And it doesn't surprise me if you've got one of those big boats. Think about this for a second. You think about Lake Minnetonka. You've got one of those big ocean-ready yachts. And you got two people coming in from the opposite side. They can't see each other. And they're heading for that wake to a jump. I could see that happening. And I am shocked that it does not happen more often. But, I just don't know. There seems to be a bit of lawlessness on Lake Minnetonka in regards to this. Because I think what it is that these police departments and the Hennepin County Sheriff, it's very difficult when you have people that will sue a police department or a sheriff's department into the ground just out of spite for them to kind of go up there and tell kids who have more money than they know what to do with that you can't do that. And so I think that's part of the problem out there. But I don't know how this accident played out where this poor individual passed away, but I can see this just gets worse and worse out there. Please be careful. It's a holiday weekend. Be careful on the roads. A lot of people heading up north, a lot of people heading south. Just be careful and watch out for motorcycles as well on the roadways. 952-946-6205. How about a weather update? Sven Sundgaard going to join us. We'll get an update, and it looks like maybe hotter weather coming in July. I got to talk to him about that as well. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard's the best darn weatherman in town. He's kind enough to join us on a Thursday to talk about the weather we've been having, the weather going on worldwide, as well as what's coming up ahead. Of course, you can find him at bringmethenews.com and, of course, over at the YouTube page, which I'll link to a little bit later on. Hey, Sven.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I've got three observations from you from the Northland that you can factor into some weather knowledge here. First of all, and something I know you've heard a little bit about, the panfish up there, they've all disappeared. The heat in June drove them either into the deep part of the lakes or, and I'm terrified to even suggest this, killed them. And they can't find, what you get is small panfish, no walleye, no legal panfish. And the only other things are bass and northerns that I was catching. So there's that. Yeah. The weeds in the lakes are late July weeds now. I mean, they have grown dramatically, and it's really shocking to see how developed they are, which is also causing hazards. And then one thing that you have talked about is animal migrations. I have gone to northern Minnesota for most of my 50 plus years. I have never seen a turkey walking down the street. Now, I've seen loons. Now, jokes aside, I've seen loons up there, but the turkeys are generally something I find in more southern parts of the state. There were turkeys running around in northern Minnesota. I have never seen that.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're native to the northern part of the state or not. Who knows if that's a migration. Part of it with turkeys and deer and everything else is we've created habitat for them that, otherwise they wouldn't have naturally had. But, the lake thing is an issue. And I know we talked about, people kind of tend to think, well, Minnesota, well, this is a win for us in a warmer world. Well, no, not necessarily, because the nature that we are accustomed to has evolved to have cold, harsh winters, hot summers, but not, stupid hot. And we should go through these cycles, where everything refreshes itself. And when you have warm summer on warm summer, we forget that last summer wasn't crazy hot like this summer has been so far, but it was still hotter than normal. And most of our summers have been. I was just looking at this the other day. Two summers out of the last 20 have been slightly cooler than normal. And I am talking about ever so slightly. And, you know, the summers are in particular where we talk about those lake issues, because it's not just warming the waters, which affects oxygen levels and fish like the fish you mentioned that are cold water loving fish, but also those toxic algae blooms. And the flooding, extreme flooding events that we're getting with some of these thunderstorms that wash pollutants that would otherwise more gradually make their way toward the lake shore and get absorbed by the ground. Those are flushing into our waterways now, especially in our urban areas. But it's not a unique problem to just the cities. Of course, anywhere where you have any agriculture, which happens even in northern Minnesota, you're going to get fertilizers or pesticides, herbicides washing into lakes if you're getting a 2-inch deluge in a 1-hour time span or more.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate all the updates you gave on the Pacific Northwest last week. We've talked about not only heat here, but that insane heat bloom out there. You and I talk when we get these cold blooms, they come kind of down from Hudson Bay and they just come down from the Canada. One thing I was trying to figure out is where exactly did this heat come from that rolled into the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and I'm actually going to do, I think, an explainer specifically about heat waves, heat domes, sometime this month, because it's worth a standalone, I don't know, Facebook Live or just a long video in itself explaining how heat works. Yeah, because we know pretty well here polar vortex and all that stuff. Even that is way more complicated than people realize, and I do think, based on the questions I had in February from people, that people would be interested in learning more about how the polar vortex forms and its seasonality and how we're seeing changes in the polar vortices with a warming Arctic. But yeah, heat waves are their own beast. And there's some research that shows that La Nina years, which we are at the tail end of a La Nina pattern, is prone for creating heat waves in the West, which then subsequently affect us given the right weather patterns. So it's a little bit complicated, but El Nino, remember, is where you have warmer than normal waters off the coast of South America. And basically, wherever you have warm ocean water, you're going to have increase in thunderstorm activity. And air that goes up must come down somewhere. And so La Nina is the opposite of El Nino, where that warmer water is pushed into the western tropical Pacific, and they get an increase in thunderstorm activity there. That air rises and descends basically in the eastern Pacific, and forms unusually large and strong areas of high pressure, which means, oh dear, hold on, my alarm's going off or something. lots of sunshine. And, you know, the strongest sunshine of the year is in the Southwest right now. So that's a normal thing. But what La Nina patterns do is exacerbate the normal season of strong sunshine in the Southwest, but makes it more widespread. And so you get this heat dome to form, because every day, think of like when we're in the middle of our heat wave, every sunny day we have where it gets up into the 90s, the air cools off at night only from the ground up to a certain depth, and nights are short this time of year. And so that heat stays in the middle of the atmosphere, and that creates a cap, basically, because it just, the heat increases in the middle of the atmosphere, so you can't get clouds to form or showers or anything that's going to cool down the process, so the heat just builds. So it's kind of a long, convoluted way of, it's better with graphics, of how this heat dome builds. And then eventually, it's just a matter of the winds pushing it in our direction. And that happened in June. And one of the things I am going to talk about as early as next week, for sure, is showing everybody where this heat dome has been this month of June, because it is fascinating. It started in the Pacific Northwest, actually, around Memorial weekend when we were cold, and then made its way towards us for those 2 weeks in June, and then moved to Colorado, Wyoming. Remember, they had record heat.
Yeah.
And then moved to Mexico, wow. Baja California. Mexico had its hottest ever temperature in June on June 18th. And then it moved back into the Northwest and exploded. And now it's coming back at us and into Canada. So now that we're in the warmer period of the year, and the winds, the weather patterns are such, now it's going to be central Canada that will get in on some heat. So look for records to be broken. You're going to hear about in the coming days in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, our friends to the north, and that heat's kind of collapsing on us. But as it spreads out, it does cool somewhat. So we're still looking at a string of 90s, but the reason we're not going to get 110 degrees is, like I explained this a couple times this week, think of a bicycle tire pump. You compress the air, you heat it up. When it expands, it cools. So that air that was confined to the Northwest is now spreading east across North America, so it is cooling. But there's a lot of heat, a lot of energy in it. So I hope that answers your question somewhat, but stay tuned for a bigger explanation of how all this connects to each other.
Your graphics are great, but you did a great job there. And one thing I just want to point out, what you just said, in June, Mexico had their hottest temperature ever. Canada just had their hottest temperature ever. How close did we come in the United States?
It's not very close because our heat record is in Death Valley.
Yeah.
The official one, and that's 134 degrees. So if this heat bubble sets up in that area, which there's no reason to think that it couldn't, because it's just kind of, it's like ping ponging around right now, the western two thirds of the continent. And especially in those areas, the mountainous areas of the Rockies, what happens is the air is able to compress. That's how it's able to get so stupid hot, is you're pushing it into mountainous areas and that kind of traps it there. And then the cool Pacific Ocean there doesn't allow air to move west. So it does get compressed. Think back to the bicycle pump analogy, yeah, I just mentioned. Whereas here, it's harder to get temperatures to 110 degrees because the air has room to expand somewhat. But, it's possible. Yeah, if this sets up in the southwest instead of the northwest or here, that we could be talking about conditions like that. And, we've just started July, the hottest month of the year.
So and there is this ugliness that they're looking at toward mid-July here. Do you think we're going to get as hot as that some people are kind of saying in the into the hundreds?
Yeah, so my buddy and other wonderful meteorologist everybody knows, Paul Douglas,
yes,
tweeted this yesterday. And so I thought I will also throw it out there today because, as he mentioned, and I mentioned in my weather video today, normally you kind of chuckle at, day 10 to 16 in the American model because it's way out there. And it is not very accurate that far out. But it had, in its evening model run last night, 4 100-degree readings for us,
oh my God,
which you would be like, yeah, right, whatever. But one of the interesting analogies is you hear from forecasters in the Pacific Northwest, they didn't believe the models coming up to this heat wave because they thought that's just too insanely extreme. Like in Portland, to break your all-time record three days in a row, I mean, this is just astronomically, and that's why I talked about the Northwest and you hear so much about it. It's not that it's just hot. This is off the charts hot. Canada's all-time temperature in Lytton, British Columbia, was 122 degrees. Previously, it was 113. So they didn't break it. They smashed it.
Yeah.
And same thing there. They broke their own record twice. They broke Las Vegas's all-time heat record. Las Vegas has only ever been as warm as 117. Canada, 122. Phoenix, Arizona's all-time record is 122. So, I'm sorry, Canada's was their record was 121. So they came within 1 degree of Phoenix's all-time record. And back to that Death Valley record, to be only 13 degrees cooler than the hottest temperature in Death Valley, that's awfully too close for comfort. And I tweeted out just a couple of hours ago, there's fires. We've been talking about the fire season's already going gangbusters out west and now to our north, too. Lytton, which set that Canadian record, had a fire go through and burnt the main downtown. So
wow.
a reporter from the CBC posted a before and after picture looking at Main Street Lytton, and it's just devastating. So it's not just about, oh, gosh, it's hot. I mean, these conditions become dangerous.
Yeah. Well, and was to your knowledge, once again, let's talk about the impacts of climate change. I mean, you have this come out of the blue. Clearly, the system is not ready for the place. Do they know what the cause of that fire was?
I don't know about that fire in particular, but,
wow.
I talked about this yesterday and today in my weather videos, showing the North America map, and you can see fires all over out west. And even a month ago that was happening. But now they're starting to pop up in places like Canada as summer's getting going there. And, you've seen the hazy skies yesterday, and right now the sun is very filtered. That's smoke from Ontario, just north of Lake of the Woods, maybe 50 to 100 miles. There are a couple fires that popped up, and that's the middle of nowhere. So there's nobody containing it that I'm aware of. And the only way we know those were there is because of satellites. And they're really pumping out a lot of smoke, especially late yesterday. And our upper level and lower level winds, so through the atmosphere, have been coming from the north, and that's just been pushing that smoke in our direction. So, I think we're going to be seeing more of that all summer, is smoke occasionally wafting in and out from fires to the west and north. And actually, no reason to think that we won't have our own fires in Minnesota, as the drought monitor was updated today. We've increased to 82% of Minnesota is under drought from 75% last week. So it's a slower increase, and that's thanks in part to the spotty hit and miss rain we did have over the weekend. We finally had a little unsettled weather. It wasn't enough to stop the drought for most of us, but it was enough to slow the increase in drought. There were two spots that the drought's over in, where they got 5 inches of rain,
yeah.
A reminder of the more normal extreme precipitation events just south of Northfield, and then Waterville, Minnesota had 5 inches of rain. But everywhere else, it was not enough rain by far to get us out of the drought yet.
So then I'm going to ask you the question here. You bring that up. I mean, I know there was rain here. I was up in the Iron Range. We had some scattered showers, and it was pretty crispy when I got up there a week ago Wednesday, and it kind of got a little bit better. Was there enough rain down here? Just your thoughts as an expert on the weather here. Do you feel as we've got enough weather here that if we, you know, if someone wants to set off some fireworks, they should be okay?
I don't think so.
You know?
I think 82% of Minnesota is probably, you know, let the professionals do it, because they scope out, you know, where are they doing it and what's the risk.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's fire danger in a lot of places. And, you know, as you mentioned, things are pretty crispy. I know they're fun and everything, but yeah, we would hate to have some fires caused here or anywhere. Think of out west. I'm sure some idiot will light fireworks in a very parched west that'll only spark more fires. Fires are caused naturally and by humans, of course.
Yeah. And I used to do – when we used to do some things with the Independence Day 4th of July fireworks. And one of the things that always amazed me is they send out – you know, a lot of places, they send out fire departments to kind of hose down areas, because it might not look like it's that contained, but those guys know exactly where the debris from the fireworks is going to fall, and they kind of try their best, if it's been dry, to wet down that area so there isn't a problem. So you're right. I think go watch a display that's going to happen. Don't try to do it yourself.
Yeah, it's going to be better anyway.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and then you can keep drinking, because you shouldn't be doing it while you're drinking, of course, anyway, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, a lot of ours are over water, I think, in Minnesota, luckily, because we have rivers and 10,000 plus lakes. So yeah, enjoy one of those shows. You know, you spend a lot of taxpayer dollars on these magnificent fire displays, so might as well.
All right. So as we look at the holiday weekend, let's get your forecast for that as we go through towards Monday.
Yeah. So we're in for a string of 90s. This isn't going to be the, you know, 9-day heat wave that we had in June consecutive, but it's going to be hot. Today we got very close, surprisingly. 89 was the high today. So, you know, July is right off where June started.
Yes.
And by the way, I didn't even mention, it was the second hottest June on record.
Wow.
And it wasn't even close. We beat 1988, which anybody who's from here knows was a notoriously hot summer. We smashed 1988 by more than 2 degrees.
Wow.
We were closer to the number one spot, which was 1931, and we beat 3 Dust Bowl years out that were in the top 10 to get to our number 2 spot. So, yes, no surprise it was a hot June. We should be easily 90 tomorrow, into the 90s, probably low to mid-90s, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We do get a brief shot of some slightly cooler air Tuesday, Wednesday, that should drop the temperatures back into the 80s and also give us the chance, at least, of some spotty thunderstorms. I think the best chance is going to be Sunday night, hopefully holding off for fireworks. But if you're in the western part of the state, you could have some thunderstorms and clouds around towards fireworks time. I think we'll stay dry here in the eastern part of the state till later in the night. But then all indications are that we're heating back up late next week. Models are differing, as we mentioned. You know, some of them have been occasionally throwing out 100 degrees, but no reason to think that it's just not going to be warming back up to close to 90 plus by late next week or next weekend. And that is heading into the statistically hottest 2 to 3 weeks of the year.
I will post your weather forecast from today a little bit later on. I'll also link to your YouTube page. Sven Sundgaard. Sven, all my best. Happy Independence Day. We will talk to you next week, okay?
You too. And everybody stay safe and cool.
Stay safe and stay cool. Sven Sundgaard joining us. BringMeTheNews.com. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show for a Thursday. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. One final thing I want to get to today. I mentioned getting out and enjoying the community celebrations around the state throughout the summer here. There's unfortunately another tradition which is occurring in the state, and it happens around Independence Day weekend throughout the summer. Basically, it's this. You'll go to a community celebration, and some idiot on a official vehicle, a fire truck, a police vehicle, or a politician's car, will have a Confederate flag. I'm going to go. I'm going to say what I say every year around this time. As a veteran, first of all, you have the First Amendment. You can do what you like. Doesn't mean I'm going to respect you. It means you can do it. But I do have a problem this about official vehicles, because this is something that's kind of government related. People that support the Confederacy want to ignore, in Minnesota, the bravery of the Minnesota First at Gettysburg on July 2nd, 1863. Tomorrow will be the anniversary of this. And although that this post is going to talk a little bit about the history really quick here, I'm not trying to get into any debate. This is just what happened. In the late afternoon of July 2nd, 1863, a little more than 5 years after Minnesota had become a state, the Union had a major hole in its line on Cemetery Ridge at Gettysburg. The second day of fighting had been brutal, with the Confederacy looking to end the war once and for all by overrunning the Union line. As the Union troops were trying desperately to hold the hill, a major hole opened up, and near 1,200 Southern troops marched forward. The only unit that could stop them was the grossly outnumbered 1st Minnesota. They had 262 men. They did not hesitate. The 1st Minnesota charged into the fray. The chaos and insanity which unfolded in the next few minutes is just, it's hard to comprehend. Within 5 minutes, 215 of the 262 1st Minnesota fell. The soldier carrying the Minnesota colors was killed. Another one dropped their weapon, picked up the flag. Five times that happened in 5 minutes. Minnesota's brave and courageous and desperate sacrifice held it until reinforcements arrived. The 82% casualty rate, 82%, still stands as the U.S. Army's largest loss of lives for any unit which still stood at the end of the at the end of the battle. Minnesota's colors were never captured, and on the display at the Capitol in the Rotunda. Most important, the Union line held for the day. In case I'm bearing the lead, Minnesota saved the Union from the Confederates on July 2nd. It's not just opinion. Major General Hancock, who ordered the 1st Minnesota in, said they should be entitled to the rank of saviors of the country. I have been to the monument for Minnesota, and I wept openly in Gettysburg at their sacrifice. You want to fly the Confederate flag? Fine. That's your freedom of speech. But don't tell me you're for Minnesota, because you put Minnesota behind. First Minnesota is what you should honor. And if you're a good Minnesotan, you don't fly that piece of trash flag. You don't fly that if you're a proud Minnesotan. And remember that. All right. Happy Independence Day. We're off tomorrow. We're off on Monday. Best of shows both days. We are back on a Tuesday. Woody Guthrie takes us out. Have a good one. Till Tuesday, see ya.
From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me, a voice was sounding.